Welcome to Conversations with Creator Waco, the show that brings you inspiring stories from our thriving creative community right here in Waco, Texas. I'm Fiona Bond, and each episode we spotlight the artists, performers, and cultural leaders who make our city a more vibrant place to live, work, and be inspired. Today's show features three spectacular seasonal experiences, each completely different and each fully immersive as a feast for the senses. There's definitely something for everyone here. First, we'll talk with Julie Cervantes, parade coordinator for the upcoming Dia de los Muertos festival and parade. Then we'll hear from Braden Brazil of Silent House Theater about their immersive gothic Halloween experience, House of Frankenstein, opening October 27th. And finally, we'll be talking to Kelly McGregor, executive director of Waco Civic Theater, who's here to tell us about their sparkling production of Frozen, opening October 30th. I'm delighted to welcome our first guest and a colorful tradition in Waco of Dia de los Muertos. Julie Cervantes is Director of Strategic Development for Creative Waco, a job she started in January. Before that, she was a beloved middle school teacher at Midway ISD, where she taught both Spanish and art. Julie is also a talented visual artist in her own right, with several acclaimed solo exhibitions and creative collaborations under her belt. At Creative Waco, she oversees both public art and resource development, and also coordinates the Dia de los Muertos parade, which she did even before she joined the Creative Waco team. So welcome, Julie. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Fiona.
And Dia de los Muertos Parade and Festival, you were one of the people that first introduced me to this concept, and it's become a really beloved tradition in Waco. And actually, this year's event is even featured statewide by Texas Highways Events magazine, which congratulations on that. But you were involved in starting this event in Waco. Tell us a little bit about how that came about and why you wanted to jump into such a big undertaking.
It was really exciting. I had the opportunity to be part of other local parades here in Waco, but it just missed a little bit of color and pizzazz that I thought this event could totally bring to it.
You wanted to go big.
Oh, big and colorful and extra celebratory. And it was after one evening when I had finished my solo exhibition, and my friend Roxana Robles and Nancy, they came over to my house one evening, and we were lamenting that we had finished our big projects and we needed something else to do.
And that's all three of you are super busy, so I can only imagine this is a superpower pack.
The energy is infinite with us. But that's when I suggested to Roxana and Nancy that let's do a fashion show with the Day of the Dead parade. And that was in 2021 when we did our first year. And Nancy and Roxana started to gather the troops, and we partnered with Eric Linares, who had already done a festival. And now we are in our fifth year, and we attract over 500 participants in the parade, and when it comes to people coming out to celebrate with us, we average about 7,000 to 8,000 people at the festival.
This year's theme is really an unusual one. It is alebrijes, which is sometimes translated as spirit animals or the kind of animal guides to the afterlife. Tell us about that tradition.
Yeah, they've only been around since the early 1900s, and this came about because of Pedro Linares. He was a paper mache artist that would create the Judases for Easter celebration.
And it's like for these big Mexican parades that you see that are religious festivals.
Yes.
Religious parades.
And so during Easter, what they would do is they would burn the Judases as part of the celebration. But in 1936, he fell ill and had a fever dream. And in his fever dream, he was dreaming of this fantastical world where it's these animals made of different parts of the animal. So it would be like a jaguar with wings and a lion with horns. And it was just the different mixed animals that were different colors.
So these
colors.
Kind of chimera blends of different animals.
Yes. And in his fever dream, he kept hearing this. Alebrije is not a real word, but in his dream, they kept whispering, alebrijes, alebrijes. So when he finally woke from his fever and was able to get better, he continued doing his Judas paper maches, but he also started creating his little animal creations. It was thanks to Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo, they are the ones who discovered him and started purchasing his work and helping to spread it throughout Mexico. It eventually, in the 1940s, made its way down to Oaxaca, where a popular woodcarver named Manuel Jimenez, he's the one that started to carve them out of wood and started to incorporate the Oaxacan patterns into the alebrijes. But finally, in the late 1970s and early 1980s, a documentarian named Judith Bronwoski, she was the one that helped give it an international audience. So the history of alebrijes, relatively new, less than 100 years old, but they've really taken flight.
That is, well, literally and metaphorically, I guess. I love that. I think of that as being an equivalent to, say, in Scottish culture, the kilt, which is a blending together of very modern interpretations of much more kind of historic symbolism and practices. And so what we now have is something that's fairly modern, but it draws on ancient traditions. And I kind of think the alebrijes tradition is maybe a little like that. It draws from kind of ancient symbolism, which you get in some of the pre-Columbian cultures of Central and South America. And then it kind of has this modern interpretation that has come to us through art, which is fascinating. So how are people interpreting that for this year's festival? What are you seeing in the preparations that people are making for the parade?
It is so exciting. I love that we have a theme. It helps people to focus their attentions on something. And if people aren't comfortable, they could still do the skulls and traditional components of Day of the Dead. Another way people can participate is we have Creative Waco is selling T-shirts with the Alebrije logo for this year. And it'll be the Alebrije girl with the marigold surrounded by her. But the cool component about it is we've incorporated augmented reality thanks to Ryan Joyner from Baylor University. And when people hold their phones up to it, she will digitally morph into different alebrije animals. And that'll be available before the festival and during the festival.
So you can wear augmented reality art and support the festival at the same time.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
It's exciting seeing what people are doing. We had an Alebrije workshop recently and got to chat with some people about what they're thinking about costumes and or dress. And some of them are really leaning into mixing the animals. So some people have wings that they're wearing. I've seen some people have rabbit ears that they're incorporating and decorating. A lot of people, they were discussing how they have one-piece suits with different prints that they've been painting on with puffy paint. And then when it comes to floats, we talked to Unidos with the Waco Police Department, and they have adopted the papier-mâché Clifford the Big Red Dog from Kendrick Elementary.
Oh, wow.
And they've restored it, and they are going all out with the Oaxaca patterns on
this large
papier-mâché.
That's going to look spectacular. I can't wait to see it. Well, and there are some new elements in this year's parade, too, and in the whole festival. I believe we're going to have some actual four-legged alebrijes from our friends at the Animal Rescue nonprofits.
Yes, we have four of them, and we're going to have puppies on parade. So we're going to have puppies incorporated throughout the parade that they're going to walk along. And
so puppies and adoptable pets from which are the organizations participating?
We have ABC Clinic, the Pet Circle, Waco Humane Society, and Fuzzy Friends are participating in this project.
Wonderful. And each of them are bringing costumed adoptable pets. And I think, I know you had told me that they're leading out the parade, and so I'm excited to see them doing that. And then if people are coming to the festival, I believe you have an Alebrijes garden too this year for the first time. Tell us about that.
That is the exciting part. We're going to have in the festival, the pets will be ready for adoption in the Alebrije garden, where a community of volunteers have created these 11 large cardboard cutout puppets that will be in the parade and then later planted in a garden around where you could adopt the pets.
Oh, great. So people can go and look at these amazing large alebrijes and maybe get to know some of the adoptable pets. And I think each of those organizations are bringing some ambassador animals too. That sounds fantastic. What is this, from your perspective, what does this event give you each, and what do you think it gives our community each year?
I am so surprised and so it's so heartwarming to see how the community comes out in full force. Even our first year doing this, we only had a few months to prepare, and we had, I believe, 45 entries and just a large amount of people who were excited to celebrate. The best thing is, it's inviting all to participate, and that's exactly what the Day of the Dead festivals have turned into. Mexico was very intentional about making this inclusive and helping everybody to be a part of the celebrations, and we're continuing that here in Waco, and so many people look forward to it, and the amount of excitement that you see people have for it and where they get to key into their own creativity, and it's just so exciting to see people get together, honor the dead, and because that's something we all share in common, and it's not something really discussed in this culture, and it's something that gives us an opportunity to discuss and honor together and remember together.
To celebrate life by honoring those who have made us who we are and passed on. I really love that vision, and people really do go all out for this. It's one of my absolute favorite events. Julie, thank you so much for everything you've done to bring this event to our community. And thank you for talking to us about it here on KWBU.
Thank you.
We can't wait to see all of that come to life. The Dia de los Muertos Festival and Parade takes place Saturday, November the 1st, with the parade starting at 4 p.m. along University Parks from Neighborly to Indian Spring Park. The festival runs until 10 p.m.
This is 103.3 Waco Public Radio. Sometimes an artist you love drifts from your mind, then something happens to remind you. In today's episode of David and Art, host David Smith revisits a French painter who isn't a household name, but probably should be.
Every once in a while, it's good to be reminded of an artist that you like. We all have so much going on and are so bombarded with the contemporary. Our favorites, whether a painter, poet, or musician, often get pushed to the bottom of the stack. I'm thinking about this because the other day, out of the blue, one of our administrators who keep the history department afloat mentioned a French painter named Gustave Caillebotte. About 10 years ago, I was on something of a Caillebotte kick and came to really like his stuff, but somehow he sort of drifted away from my attention. He isn't nearly the household name as are his famous contemporaries like Monet and Pissarro, but I think he deserves far more recognition than he gets. He's someone you should know if you like art. He was born into a wealthy Parisian family in 1848, and when he was 22, was drafted into the French army to fight against the Prussians in that catastrophe. After the war, he began to be interested in painting, not an uncommon story for war veterans, and soon was building a studio in his parents' house. His father and mother both died over the next few years, and, boosted by a big inheritance, he bought an apartment on one of the most fashionable boulevards of Paris. Unlike many other artists, he had no need to support himself through work. He actually bought paintings from other artists and even paid the rent sometimes for Monet's studio. He had 8 of his paintings included in the second big Impressionists exhibit in 1876, and he's often associated with that style. But overall, his work doesn't fit neatly into that one box. He seems to recognize that the strengths of Impressionism are just one possible tool among several styles. When his paintings can benefit from some of its touches, he uses them. When he paints water, he paints like an Impressionist. But he also painted still lifes, usually food, with a bracing realism of the sort the Impressionists had little interest in. Indeed, when Caillebotte starts painting like an Impressionist with flowers and gardens, his distinctiveness usually fades quickly. We have these kinds of paintings from Monet and that bunch, and we frankly don't need any more nondescript Impressionist gardens. When he does something like that, his work reminds me of a bad cover version of a hit song. His strengths, to put it mildly, lie elsewhere. He painted sharply focused interiors of Paris apartments and perceptive street scenes that make you feel like you're standing right there with him on a bridge or a boulevard. He died in 1894 when he was just 45 years old. Thanks, Angelica, for bringing him back to my attention.
David and Art is a production of KWBU. You can listen again or explore past episodes anytime at kwbu.org.
You're back with Conversations with Creative Waco, and I'm your host, Fiona Bond. We now turn to something deliciously gothic for Halloween. Silent House Theatre is inviting brave Wacoans to step inside their House of Frankenstein in historic Waco Foundation's McCulloch House Museum. Here to tell us more is Braden Brazil, co-founder of Silent House Theatre and a proud Waco native. Whether as a performer, producer, stage manager, or assistant director, Braden has had a hand in every one of Silent House's dynamic productions. She also serves as theatre director for Mission Waco's Jubilee Theatre. Silent House Theatre is known for producing thought-provoking, immersive theatre, and their latest Halloween-themed experience sounds just like that. Welcome, Braden.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, House of Frankenstein is not your typical sit-down theatre show. What can audiences expect from this immersive experience?
Well, like we did House of Dracula last year, we are on a historic Waco home tour where we are using the historic Waco homes as the setting of our play. Instead of doing it in a main stage, you know, a theater, we are using the house as the setting. So it's completely enveloping you. You're in the house.
It's a character.
Yes, it absolutely functions like a character. And you're not necessarily seated the entire time. So we use the rooms as different pieces of the show, different scenes of the show. So the audience will be allowed to kind of wander a bit and see the different rooms and, get to explore the house.
That's so cool. How did that collaboration come about with the Historic Waco Foundation?
Well, we always wanted to do it. We've always had the idea of doing something inside of a house show. We don't have our own space. So it's a great excuse to be able to inhabit other spaces that might not normally be a theater. So the idea was always there. And then we reached out to Eric Swanson, the executive director at Waco Historic Homes. And he loved the idea. And he's been wanting to do something like this for a long time. So this will be our third show in one of the historic homes.
I love it. So why Frankenstein? What is it about that particular story that lent itself to this year's unpacking?
Oh my God, it's an incredible story. I was just talking to Julie about this. It's such a timely story, especially with the story is about, you know, new technology. At the time when it was written, it was in 1816, Darwinism was just, you know, coming alive. And there was this idea of technology, electricity, science that really wasn't explored before. And basically, you know, people testing the limits of, you know, can we be like God? Can we create things that didn't exist before? So you see,
and that might take on a life of their own and might be able to think for themselves. I can't imagine what the
right,
what
why
the current
that's
correlation
so timely.
Could be.
Absolutely. So you have that extreme story that was written by a woman. Mary Shelley was 18 years old when she wrote it.
Wow.
Which is just unbelievable. Yeah, she wrote it. In Switzerland, they were summering in Switzerland with Percy Shelley, her husband, Lord Byron, Dr. Polidori. There was a group. And
wouldn't you have loved to be a fly on the wall in that group?
Yes, and it was a year without summer, apparently. There was no summer weather. They were indoors. And so they challenged each other to write a ghost story, who was going to write the best. And that's how she came up with Frankenstein, because she had a nightmare. And then she was like, oh, my God, this nightmare was incredible. It was so scary. And that was how she created the story.
That's phenomenal. Well, I can't wait to see this, especially with the cast that you've got lined up. Mm-hmm. Who is this for? Is there anyone that you would say, like, I'm a little bit, when it comes to scary stuff, I'm a bit of a wimp. but I can imagine maybe it's not suitable for young kids. Do you have any kind of guidelines?
Yeah, so I would say this is definitely an adult show because of not only the spooky element, but also because of the content. I don't know if it would hold a six-year-old's attention, you know, for 2 hours. But I would say that don't worry about it being like things jumping out at you. You know, it's not a typical haunted house either. It's definitely spooky. It's definitely eerie. You'll definitely have a little bit of a, you know, there's actually a line in the show that she says she wanted to write a story that would make the reader dread to look around.
Oh, wow.
I would say that our show matches that. You might dread to look around, but you won't be, you know, there's no chainsaws coming after you or anything like that.
So it's not horror, but it is kind of thought-provoking, and it's kind of a journey into the inner as well as the kind of outer gothic experience.
Yes, and just being in a house that old that is also known to be a little haunted and on its own without us inhabiting it, the McCulloch House has that reputation. So, you know, you might get a little chill down your spine.
Well, this sounds perfect for Halloween. So it actually starts that week, right?
Yes.
From the 27th?
Through the 31st, yes. We have a show October 27th through the 31st at 7:30 p.m. every night.
Wonderful. And how can people get tickets or find out more?
So you can go to silenthousetheater.com. You can also go to Waco Historic Homes, and they have the ticket link as well.
So the Historic Waco Foundation,
yes.
We'll have it on their website. Great.
Yes, yes. Cool. And so you can get tickets there, and we would love to have you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Braden. I'm really intrigued and definitely planning to brave that experience. House of Frankenstein runs October 27th to 31st at the Historic Waco Foundation's McCulloch House Museum. And tickets and showtimes are available through Silent House Theatre's website and social media. Thank you, Braden.
Yes, thank you.
Now to a very different but also magical dramatic experience. We're joined by Kelly McGregor. She's executive director of Waco Civic Theatre, and she's going to talk about their upcoming production of Frozen. Kelly has been executive director of Waco Civic Theatre for just about 2 years now, I think, which
yes.
is fantastic. Originally from Canada, Kelly has called Waco home since 2007. She is a former professor of voice at Baylor University's theatre department and brings a unique blend of artistic vision and nonprofit savvy to her role, directing major productions and strengthening the theatre's connection with the community. She and her team are busy preparing and dialing up the magic to create a theatrical winter wonderland with Frozen. Kelly, let's start with the big one. Well, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome to Conversations
with Creative Waco. It's always great to have you on. Why Frozen? Why did this appeal to you? And what made this show the right choice for this season with Waco Civic Theatre?
Well, of course, the movie, the original movie, was so magical and so and inspired so many people with that gorgeous music and the lovely storyline. But when I was a kid, my grandmother gave me a book of Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales. And so, of course, the Snow Queen was one of those fairy tales. And in that book, there was all kinds of art by an artist named Kay Nielsen, who went on to design sets for Hollywood. But that art in that beautiful book, just I would obsess over it. And I remember when we first got that book, I was 4 years old. So there were several years where I'd just look at that gorgeous art and read these stories. And there's a reason why these stories are chosen by Disney to be turned into movies and why they are they stand the test of the time, because they have these themes that are so beautiful and so important. And in the original story, it talks about one of the characters not being able to see things clearly and being able to only see the bad in things, and and how love thawed that out for that character. And it's the same kind of situation in this story of two sisters, where one of them can only see that it's a life of loneliness and solitude that she's going to have to sign up for, and it's someone who enters into that part of her psyche that says, no, it doesn't have to be this way. And connection and human relationships are really what you need to thrive.
I love that. And gosh, I mean, that seems like such an important message.
Yes.
Timeless, of
course,
but also very pertinent to our time. I love, too, that this is a story where it's not necessarily romantic love that triumphs.
Exactly. And I actually turned to my music director the other day, because there is a little famous scene where Olaf turns to Anna and says, some people are worth melting for.
Oh.
And it's just a really sweet part of the movie, and it's part of the Broadway musical as well. But I wonder, because it's an act of true love that that fixes the situation, and they are looking for an act of true love. And I'm like, but that was it right there. How come the story doesn't stop? When he said, I'll sit here with you and melt for you. This could be the end of me, but that's okay, because you're worth it. You know,
I can tell already this is going to make me cry. This production.
Exactly. Yes. In the very best way.
And you have a big cast for this.
We do. Yes, we actually have a double cast. So the entire show is double cast. Waco is stuffed full of talent. It is incredible.
That's so great to hear.
Yes, and both of these casts are going to blow you away. They're absolutely incredible people. The talent is amazing, and they are just able to bring such life and beauty to this story. It's so exciting.
I love that. And it sounds from what you've described about the artistic inspiration that the set will also be a character in this.
It's going to be pretty incredible. We have we are just employing every possible volunteer these days to try and get this entire thing painted into white marble. So,
wow.
We have some amazing scenic artists that are helping us out right now. And I've roped in my husband to cut some of the snowflake proscenium. You'll see some pretty beautiful imagery, these lacy fractal, you know, snowflakes.
Oh, yes.
All throughout.
I think that's in the song, right?
It's something like that, yeah.
That's amazing. I can't wait to see it because I know that set design is actually one of your superpowers too. So, I presume that this is for the whole family, this production.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are welcoming audiences of all ages, but do not believe that it's only for the children and for the children in your life. This is absolutely a story that everyone will enjoy. It is already selling out, so we get your tickets quick. But it is absolutely heartwarming, beautiful. And again, this talent will blow you away. And that is just simply something everyone has to show up and see.
Well, having seen the cast list, I think it might be something I have to see twice.
You're right.
I'm coming on opening night, but we may just have to see it twice because you've got two really strong casts.
Incredible.
There.
Yeah.
And I know it's something, especially for this time of year, Thanksgiving, you know, coming up to Thanksgiving, it's going to be really lovely to have a full-on family musical.
Yes.
At that time you've got some incredible singers. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about people in the audience singing along or dressing up to come?
Oh, definitely dress up. I don't know if you'll want to sing along. You're going to want to hear the actors do their amazing work.
There's a little bit of theater etiquette there. I mean, maybe doing that in the movie theater, but we want to hear the actors in the theater.
Right. And of course, casts, when they come to audition, they usually know that there's going to be something crazy that I have them do. So we have them completely climbing walls. And that's...
Wow. As they're singing. That's a workout.
Exactly.
That's worth going to see. That's kind of like seeing really great gymnastics, being able to listen to someone sing as they're climbing a wall or flying through the air or whatever. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And so we've tried to put together as much magic as we can. Of course, we are not Broadway. We have a small stage compared to what they can present in the West End or in Broadway, but Waco can bring the magic. So we've thought of all kinds of small little details, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we will work all of those out.
I love it. Well, and a smaller theater makes it more intimate too. So
exactly.
You really feel like you're part of the action. Presumably people can get tickets from the Waco Civic Theater site.
Yes, every performance, there are 20 performances, but every performance still has tickets right now, but that won't last.
But they're going fast.
Yes.
So get them soon. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I can't wait to step into that sparkling world that you and your team are creating, and you can catch Frozen at Waco Civic Theater beginning October 30th. Tickets are available now at wacocivictheatre.com. That's a wrap for this episode of Conversations with Creative Waco. A huge thank you to Julie Cervantes, Braden Brazil, and Kelly McGregor for sharing their creativity, talent, and passion with us today. Don't forget, House of Frankenstein runs October 27th to 31st at the McCulloch House Museum. Frozen opens Thursday, October the 30th at Waco Civic Theatre and runs until mid-November. And the Dia de los Muertos Parade and Festival, Saturday, November the 1st. If you missed part of today's show or want to hear past episodes, you can find us at kwbu.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And for weekly updates on what's happening in Waco art scene, subscribe to Waco Insider or the Waco Buzz, or ideally to both. Join me again next Friday when we'll have another episode of Conversations with Creative Waco. I'm Fiona Bond. Here's wishing you all some amazing, immersive, creative experiences in the coming week, and definitely the chance to dress for the occasion.